Anthropic published an engineering post yesterday called Building Agents That Reach Production Systems with MCP, and I want to start there. It's the most concrete piece of guidance about how to wire an agent to a real system that I've read this year, and the nearest thing we have to Anthropic telling us where the platform investment is going. The post is organized around a simple frame. There are three ways to connect an agent to an external system: direct API calls, a CLI, and MCP. Direct API calls are where every team starts. They're fine when one agent talks to one service. They fall apart at the M by N integration problem. Once you have more than a couple of agents and more than a couple of services, every pair becomes its own bespoke integration, with its own auth handling, its own tool descriptions, its own edge cases. A CLI is a thin common layer, fast, cheap, perfect for local sandboxes, but it hits hard limits on mobile, web, and anything cloud-hosted that doesn't expose a shell. MCP is the third option. It's the protocol layer. One server exposes your system's capabilities. Every compatible client can reach it, and auth and discovery are standardized. Anthropic's pitch is that as production agents move into the cloud, running continuously at scale, reaching systems that are also in the cloud and behind auth, MCP is the layer that compounds. They offer a number. MCP SDK downloads hit 300 million a month, up from 100 million at the start of the year. Take the number with the usual vendor stat grain of salt, but the direction is consistent with what you see on the ground. Every agent harness worth using now speaks MCP. The interesting part of the post isn't the pitch, it's the specific patterns. Three of them are worth holding on to. First, group tools around intent, not endpoints. This is the advice most MCP servers I've seen in the wild do not follow. The default move when you wrap an API is to mirror the OpenAPI spec one-to-one. 40 endpoints, 40 tools, the agent picks one at a time and wanders around your call graph. Anthropic's counter pattern, a single create issue from thread, beats get thread plus pass messages plus create issue plus link attachment. Fewer, better described tools. The agent finishes a task in 2 calls instead of 12. Second, for very large surfaces, Cloudflare, AWS, Kubernetes, stop trying to enumerate the primitives. Expose just 2 tools, search and execute, and let the agent write a short script that you run against your API in a sandbox. Cloudflare's MCP server is the reference example. 2 tools, roughly 2,500 endpoints, about 1,000 tokens of schema. That's the shape of an interface designed for code to consume rather than a human menu. Third, on the client side, the post is blunt about context efficiency. Tool search, loading definitions on demand instead of dumping the whole catalog into context, cut tool definition tokens by 85% in their testing while keeping selection accuracy high. Programmatic tool calling, where the agent processes results in code rather than returning them raw to the model, cut multi-step token usage by about 37%. Both numbers are internal, but they match the direction you feel in your own builds. The bill is almost never the model doing work. It's the model reading a tool schema for the 47th time. I'd read the post even if you don't use Claude. The patterns are protocol independent, and they're a reasonable spec for the shape of a production agent integration circa right now. On the same day, Anthropic did something else with less noise. The Claude Code SDK is now the Claude Agent SDK. The harness that powers Claude Code, the terminal first, gather context, take action, verify loop, is being repositioned as a general purpose agent harness. The companion blog post puts it this way. At Anthropic, Claude Code has become far more than a coding tool. They're using it for deep research, video creation, note-taking. It powers, in their words, almost all of their major agent loops. The rename says it directly. The distinctive thing Claude Code did, giving the model access to a real computer with bash and files and a working terminal is the distinctive thing that makes any of their agents work. I think this is directionally correct and worth a minute of reflection. The design principle behind Claude Code was never write an IDE plugin or wrap a code base. It was let the model have the same tools a programmer uses, grep, tail, a shell, a file system, and stop trying to pre-digest the world for it. When you apply that principle to a research agent, the research agent gets better. Apply it to a customer support agent, same result. Apply it to a scheduling agent, same story. The shape of the harness matters more than the task. The SDK guide formalizes this. The agent loop is named. Gather context, take action, verify work, repeat. Subagents are first class, both for parallelism and, maybe more importantly, for context isolation, so an orchestrator doesn't drown in 100 tool results it didn't need. 3 verification patterns: rules-based feedback like linters, visual feedback from screenshots, and LLM as judge when the rules are fuzzy. A short list, a usable list. What I'd watch for: the distance between Claude Code with a different prompt and a production agent for your actual business process is mostly about tools, not about the harness. Anthropic has been saying this for months. Between the MCP patterns post and the agent SDK rename, they're now saying it in code. Also from the Claude team yesterday, a new slash command in Claude Code called slash ultra review. It runs a fleet of bug hunting agents in the cloud. Findings land in the CLI or the desktop app. Anthropic's pitch is to run it before merging critical changes, auth, data migrations, the stuff you don't want to catch on a Friday night. Pro and Max users get 3 free reviews through May 5th. After that, each run is billed to extra usage at $5 to $20, depending on the size of the change. A reply from Wilhelm van der Walt surfaced the pricing before Anthropic highlighted it, pulling from the docs. I want to steelman this and be skeptical of it at the same time. On the steelman side, this is the exact pattern Shopify's CTO said on a podcast that same day he could not find in market. He'll be on in a minute. His claim was that the best pre-merge review setup is a pro-tier model, running a critique loop with another pro-tier model, taking its time, not a swarm of cheap agents. Few agents, expensive models, long latency, high quality output. $5 to $20 per review is consistent with a pro-tier model doing real work. For an auth path change, you'd pay that and consider it cheap. On the skeptical side, the replies are already showing the 2 failure modes you'd expect. One user reports the command fails after a few minutes, but still consumes the allowance. Could we make something that reverts back the allowance if it has failed? Which, yes, you should. Another asks a question I like. If slash ultra review finds bugs that Opus wrote in the first place, do you get charged for the whole bug lifecycle? That is a real question about the business model. It's also the kind of thing that's going to get asked a lot more, and it ties directly into the next story. Uber's CTO Praveen Nepali Naga told The Information last week, it circulated widely on Reddit yesterday, that Uber's 2026 AI budget is blown. His words, "I'm back to the drawing board because the budget I thought I would need is blown away already." Primary cause? Claude Code uptake. A few numbers from the piece worth sitting with. About 1,800 code changes a week at Uber are now written entirely by an internal AI agent with no direct human input. Roughly 95% of Uber engineers use AI tools monthly. Close to 70% of the code that gets committed is AI-generated. Uber's internal AI agent share of code changes went from under 1% to around 8% in a few months. 2 things are happening at once here. First, the fixed-tier enterprise pricing everyone grew up on is gone. Anthropic, and this is covered in the India Today write-up, moved enterprise customers to a hybrid model. lower per-seat fees, plus mandatory token commits. Even if your team doesn't burn the tokens you committed to, you pay for them. The predictability a CFO needs, headcount times dollars, is broken. You now have to forecast token consumption on a usage curve that's doubling every few months, in a workflow that's still experimental for half the engineers using it. Second, a new phenomenon the piece calls token maxing. At companies like Meta, internal dashboards are reportedly ranking employees by token usage. That's a measurement choice that gets you lines of code measured in 2014, all over again. We know how that movie ends. Critics in the piece flag it explicitly. High token consumption does not translate to better outcomes. And we'll hear Shopify's CTO say directly that the anti-pattern he's watching for is exactly this. My read, tentatively, the vendor pricing story here is the important one. A CFO can plan around fixed seats. A CFO cannot plan around a hybrid model with a token commit when usage is growing 40% a quarter, and the tools themselves change pricing every other week. We had one version of this conversation yesterday with Anthropic's pro-tier A/B test on Claude Code. The Uber story is the enterprise version. Same underlying instability, different tier. The piece I'd most strongly recommend from the last 24 hours is Mikhail Perikin's conversation with Swix on latent space, titled CI-CD Breaks at AI Speed. Perikin is Shopify's CTO. Before that, he ran Microsoft's web services group, Bing, Edge, Ads. He is not a hype curve guy. He brought charts, internal, real data from Shopify. A few things stood out. The first is what he calls the December 2025 phase transition. Before December, internal AI tool adoption at Shopify was growing steadily, but not dramatically. In December, something clicked. Models crossed a threshold. The curve broke open. Daily active users of at least one AI tool now approach 100% of the company. It's hard not to do your job now without interacting deeply at least with one tool, he said. The shape of the curve matches what a lot of people felt privately in December and couldn't quite name. The second thing, CLI-based agents are outgrowing IDE tools. Cursor, Copilot, Perikin's word was that they're not exactly shrinking, but they're not growing as fast. Claude Code, Codex, Shopify's internal agent called Roast, apparently, are taking off. He's describing the same pattern DHH described this week when he posted a screenshot of NeoVim in the middle, with Kimmy and Claude on either side. The IDE was the context delivery mechanism when humans were doing most of the reading. When the agent does most of the reading, the IDE is a UI for an audience that isn't there. The third thing, token distribution inside Shopify is skewing. The top 10% of users are growing their consumption faster than the 75th percentile, which is growing faster than the median. Perikin's reaction was honest. It feels not ideal. Taken to the limit, one person ends up consuming all the tokens. Swix asked him about Jensen Huang's line that a 200,000K engineer not spending 100,000K a year in tokens is underutilizing. Perikin's response was careful. He said Jensen is directionally correct for sure, but he spent the rest of the segment naming the anti-pattern. Quote, the anti-pattern is running multiple agents, too many agents in parallel that don't communicate with each other. That's almost useless compared to just fewer agents and burns tokens very efficiently. His actual preferred pattern is a critique loop with a pro-tier model. One agent writes, another agent, ideally a different model, critiques. The first agent revises, the second critiques again. Slow, expensive per turn, fewer tokens total than a swarm, much better code. The fourth thing, and I think the most important operationally, the CI-CD pipeline is the new bottleneck. More PRs, higher probability of at least one test failing, more time spent isolating the offending PR, evicting it, retesting without it, redeploying. The global mutex of Merge is becoming the cost center. Perakin is candid that he doesn't see a replacement metaphor yet. He said he's long been an opponent of microservices, and now, reluctantly, he's starting to wonder if microservices make a comeback in an agent-first world, because small, independently deployable units let the merge mutex decentralize. What I took away, the story inside Shopify is not AI makes everyone faster. It's AI makes some people a lot faster, CI-CD strains under the volume, and the human processes that sit around the codebase, PR review, merge queue, test flakiness recovery, become the bottleneck. If you run a platform team, that's your next 12 months. Smaller piece, but I can't let it go. Mitchell Hashimoto, Terraform, Ghosty, now working on Zig, posted an observation yesterday about writing Go again with an agent in the loop. The pattern he named is one every senior engineer recognizes the moment they hear it. Here's the quote. "It's far too easy to allocate, and agents, probably people too, do it too often. For example, to undo work on error, it's enticing to keep track of the work done, but that's a mistake. If an error case is rare, and they usually are, you should pessimize the error case and optimize the success case. Don't allocate unnecessarily on the happy path if it's going to succeed 99%+ of the time. Let the error case be slower." He gave a real example. The Zig compiler doesn't store file, line, and column info when it parses, because parsing succeeds most of the time, and that metadata is a waste of memory on the happy path. When an error happens, Zig just reparses the whole file from scratch in a slow path that does collect the metadata. It's pessimistic about the rare case instead of dragging it through the common one. Conditional branches, Hashimoto added, are basically free when they're predictable. Memory access is not free, even cached, because cache locality dominates. The reason I'm flagging this, Hashimoto is describing the failure mode that makes agent-written Go ship, pass tests, and feel subtly wrong. Agents allocate state eagerly because the training signal rewards code that looks safe in a diff. A sharp junior wouldn't do it. A seasoned engineer wouldn't do it. An RL reward that optimizes for appears to handle failure correctly does do it. Hashimoto himself said he doesn't expect models to reason to this pattern reliably in the short term, and that you'd have to bake it into tools and result criteria, in a skill, in a harness rule, in a review agent. That's the operational takeaway. If you're using agents to write hot path Go, Rust, or Zig, the taste level critique isn't going to come from the first pass model. It has to come from a tool call, a lint rule, or a review loop that's told to care about it. This is the thing Anthropic's Agent SDK post is gesturing at when it talks about rules-based feedback. While Anthropic was publishing patterns, OpenAI was shipping Surface. Workspace agents in ChatGPT, a research preview for business, enterprise, edu, and teachers plans. The pitch, shared agents that handle complex, long-running workflows across tools and teams. Build an agent once, share it across a team. Let it pull context from docs, email, chat, code, and take approved actions in linear, Slack, and the usual connector graph. A couple of honest reactions. First, the framing of shared agent is newish. Individual chat assistants have been around. Per org agents that can be configured once, versioned, and pointed at a team's workflows are closer to what Anthropic pitches with managed agents. Two companies, same quadrant, different UX. Aaron Levy retweeted it and called it the biggest news yet in software going headless, which Aaron is Aaron, so factor for the flaw there. But the direction he's naming is real. If the shared agent becomes the primary surface for a team's knowledge work, every SaaS vendor whose moat was their UI has a problem. Second, look at the split. Workspace agents is business and up, plus users don't get it. OpenAI has spent the last year learning that consumer plans and enterprise plans want different things, and they're routing capability down the tier structure accordingly. Anthropic is doing the same thing with Claude Code. This is the normal shape of a market that's deciding who the high-margin customer is. What I'd watch, the concrete examples OpenAI gave, qualifying leads, routing feedback, reviewing vendor requests, pulling reports, are exactly the workflows a $300 a seat enterprise plan is priced for. They are not, by and large, agentic coding. The enterprise edge is filling in with business process agents faster than it is with coding agents. Both matter. They have different failure modes and different procurement stories. Switching modalities. Google DeepMind published a paper yesterday called Image Generators Are Generalist Vision Learners. And because everyone at DeepMind is apparently required to name things after fruit now, the model is called Vision Banana. Radu Sorokat, one of the co-authors, posted the pitch. The claim, traditional computer vision tasks, segmentation, depth estimation, surface normal prediction, can be performed at or near state-of-the-art with a single generalist image generation model. Segmentation becomes generating a mask. Depth becomes generating a depth map. Normals become generating a normal map. The interface is image to image. The model is one model. A few days ago, OpenAI's GPT Image 2 topped the LM Arena leaderboard by a record 242 points. The reaction on Reddit was about a photo of a woman in a chair. The reaction in research land should be about the direction. The generative image stack is absorbing what used to be distinct computer vision pipelines. What this means, if it holds, a lot of pipeline code you currently maintain, depth maps for a robotics stack, segmentation masks for a labeling tool, normals for a 3D workflow, becomes a prompt and diffuse call instead of a model zoo. A reply from James Klon, which I thought was the sharpest on the thread, asked the right question. If image generation becomes the interface for vision tasks, what catches the failure mode when a plausible generated view is just wrong enough to steer the next action, but clean enough to pass as evidence? That's the real engineering problem. A misclassified pixel in a segmentation model you at least know was a classifier. A plausible but wrong depth map from an image generator looks like a photo. The failure mode is subtler, and the QA strategy is different. I don't have a clean answer. I'd watch what the first robotics teams that actually put Vision Banana in a control loop do for verification. That's the experiment worth tracking. Two local inference notes. 1. Qwen 3.6 27B dense. The Unsloth quantized GGUF is 16.8 gigabytes. Runs on a MacBook. Simon Willison ran his informal Pelican on a bicycle SVG test and said, quote, definitely the best Pelican riding a bicycle I've had from a 16.8 gigabyte model file. Alibaba's Qwen team claims the 27B dense surpasses the older Qwen 3.5 397B MOE on major coding benchmarks. A Reddit thread in local LLAMA with 871 upvotes literally asked, forgive my ignorance, but how is a 27B model better than a 397B? The answer is probably some combination of better data, better post-training, and the fact that dense models can outpunch sparse MOEs at this size when the training pipeline is right. But the headline for the builder on this podcast is simple. Real coding work on a laptop at laptop latencies. 2. OpenAI released privacy filter. First open model from OpenAI in 2026, Apache 2.0. It's a bidirectional token classification adaptation of GPT-OSS, trained to detect and mask personally identifiable information. 1.5 billion parameters total, 50 million active, small enough to run in a browser. Eli Bakush called the 128K context window at that size quite impressive. If you have a rag over enterprise data project and PII redaction is in the critical path, and it usually is, this is the kind of low-drama, high-utility release that just saves you a week of integration work. Grab it.
One more data point worth sitting with.
Anthropic published the follow-up analysis to their 81,000-user Claude survey, focused on the economics. There's one finding I want to pull out because it's sharper than the usual displacement headline. The relationship between speed-up and perceived job threat is U-shaped. People who report AI slowing them down, creative workers, some writers, some lawyers, express high job displacement worry. They don't benefit personally, but they see the technology coming for the field. That's one arm of the U. The other arm is the group reporting the largest speed-ups. The people AI is most dramatically helping are also the most worried about being replaced. The people in the middle, moderate speed-up, neither slowed down nor transformed, worry the least. Anthropic's own read is that this makes economic sense. If your tasks are shrinking rapidly in time to complete, there's more uncertainty about the future viability of the role. I think that's right. The second related finding is about career stage. Only 60% of early career respondents said they personally benefit from AI. For senior workers, it was 80%. The early career story, the one everyone's been trying to read from macro hiring data, is now visible in Anthropic's own customer survey. Treat this with the usual caveats. Claude user respondents who opted into a survey are a biased sample, but the direction matches every other signal we have. If you're hiring, the juniors you do bring on need a different ramp than the one you had. Three quick ones before I go. Ethan Mollick flagged that OpenAI released a free healthcare build of ChatGPT 5.4 for clinicians that, per OpenAI, beats specialty-matched physicians on a benchmark of real clinical tasks, even when those physicians have unlimited time and web access. Mollick, to his credit, flagged the caveat immediately. The benchmark was designed by OpenAI. It is fully open, so third parties can rerun it. Watch for the independent reruns before updating. OpenAI-designed benchmarks clearing humans is the category of claim that demands outside replication every time. Ars Technica published its newsroom AI policy yesterday. Short, plain English, worth reading if you build retrieval or summarization for enterprise. The key line: AI tools must not be used to generate, extract, or summarize material that is then attributed to a named source, whether as a direct quote, a paraphrase, or a characterization of someone's views. It's the constraint most enterprise summarization products are not written to enforce. Accountability, Ken Fisher writes, is non-transferable. You can't hand it to a colleague, an editor, or a tool. That's a product spec disguised as a policy. And Sony published a paper in Nature today on an autonomous ping pong robot called Ace. Reinforcement learning, Sony's own vision sensors, expert level play. Ping pong is the canonical hard real-time robotics benchmark, sub 100 milliseconds perception to action loops, adversarial opponent, noisy sensing. A Nature-level, peer-reviewed public baseline on it is a quiet but real milestone. The custom sensor story is probably the part most robotics people will want to read closely. Put today together and I see three narrower things worth holding separately. One, the agent stack is filling in around MCP and a gather act verify loop, and Anthropic is writing the patterns down. Two, the bill for all of this is showing up in CFO spreadsheets faster than CFOs can price it, and nobody has a stable answer. Three, the people inside companies that are actually shipping with agents, Shopify, Uber, are converging on the same taste. Fewer agents in a critique loop, pro-tier models, long latencies, rigorous PR review. Not swarms, not token maxing. I'd rather ship with Perikin's pattern than Jensen's number. That's what I'm watching next. Lennar Kess.